Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy for November 3rd, 2011, episode 125. Cue up, everybody. Cue up. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine After Hours in the iTunes Store. Hey, thanks for joining us again, folks. Great having you here, and great having you here, Peter, as always. Yeah. You know,
I filled in for you for a couple of days on daily.
Of course, because I was out in Vegas, and everybody thought I was out there for the SEMA show, but I was not. I couldn't get out there in time to get to the show. I was out there because Kia was having a little media launch thing on their five-door Rio, their little subcompact car. Which is actually a pretty good little car, too. It really is. But
it doesn't sound like something you'd get on a plane to go to Las Vegas for, but... okay.
But that's where they were holding it.
Yeah.
And it was actually pretty good, too, and we could talk about SEMA and even the Rio, but on the plane back, I just got off the plane literally 2 hours ago to come do the show tonight, I sat next to Gene Jennings.
Gene! So,
yeah, it was good because...
Because Gene hasn't spoken to us or wanted to be on the show
for a couple of years now
because of David E's
dropping the piano on her.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
So what'd you have to say?
No, we had a great talk. It was great to connect with her again. You know, she's truly a hardcore enthusiast.
Yeah.
Had some pretty good insights on stuff, and we're going to be taping a show in December with Mark Fields for AutoLine, and she agreed to come on and do that show. So I think everything's cool with us again.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that was good to know. So what else has been going on since we last talked? October sales, man, in the U.S. market were surprisingly strong,
yeah,
I thought.
What's your take on that?
Well, my take is... how can the economy be as bad as everyone's talking about it being if we're selling a million new cars every month? It just doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, I know. And Chrysler was up, but if you look at their numbers, it was all Jeep and Ram.
Well, there was a couple of others that did really well. The Chrysler 200.
The Compass.
The Dodge Avenger had a real strong
run. I think the 200 is proof positive that you can never...
I know where you're going.
Overestimate the taste of the American public. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's fantastic. It's just lowest common denominator, whatever.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
But they're selling them. And it's interesting because remember they brought in that guy who had been running Chrysler Canada. I want to say Reed Bigland. I'm not sure. I might be massacring his name, but... who was doing a great job in Canada, and that's why they moved him into Dodge, you know, as they put Ralph Gilles into SRT. But maybe this guy Bigland's figured out something to do, but Dodge passenger cars were up, yeah.
But the Grand Cherokee and the Ram and the Jeeps,
right. No,
that's really why.
That's really where it's at.
And, you know, that's... Who's kidding who? That's where the money is for
right.
Ford and GM.
Too. Right. I think Hyundai Kia continue to be a steamroller. Man, they get more and more serious.
And more profitable.
And they outsold Nissan, which had a good month. And, you know, and I'm combining them together, of course. And they came, they didn't catch Honda. In fact, Honda had the best-selling car for the month with the Accord, which is astonishing.
The incentives on them. Big.
Well, yeah, but you got to have inventory to sell it, and you know.
Oh well, they got inventory because no one's been going there lately. So,
BMW is rocking and rolling.
BMW and Audi,
right?
Continue to.
Well, except that Mercedes actually outsold BMW last month, because if you look at the raw data, you got to remember that there's some 5,000 minis in the total, so you got to take that out. And then on the Mercedes side, you have to take out Smart, but there's not a lot to take out.
But Daimler's having, didn't they have profit issues? They're not making they're not making the money that
I don't think BMW, they're making the money that BMW is. No, and the X3, as you know, is selling real strong. Apparently they're making good money on it because
it's huge. I mean,
they exceeded analyst expectations.
And that's a great vehicle too.
Oh, it is.
It's really excellent.
So yeah, I thought that October sales were pretty good overall.
Fiat 500s weren't good.
No, they didn't. They dropped down to, I think they were under 2,000,
yeah,
like 1,900. 1,600, was it? Yeah. And Mini, which had been, last month we talked about this, and, looked like maybe they were catching Mini. No, Mini came back. Fiat 500, they didn't sell a whole lot of them, right?
No, I think we're seeing the end of the first on the block syndrome, and they're going to be struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And those dealers are going to be looking at their watches. And Sergio's going to say, oh, well, we've got the crossover coming, and they're still going to be looking at their watches. So,
well, at least Chrysler's making good money for them, too, because they're solidly profitable now. Even though the number's not big, it's solidly profitable.
If they weren't, Fiat would be...
Fiat would be hurting, yeah. Well, look, I said 2 years ago that at some point in the future, and I didn't mean, way in the future, Chrysler would be bailing out Fiat, because Chrysler has the potential, if run right, to make a whole lot more money than Fiat does.
Yeah.
But, I don't think there's any question that Fiat's going to help Chrysler out in small cars. They desperately need that. That's one of the points that they made on this Kia Rio trip that I was on, is they see the subcompact segment in the U.S. market doubling in 4 years' time, going from roughly 400,000 cars to 800,000 cars in only 4 years' time. So that's a huge amount of growth in a segment, and currently Chrysler has nothing in there whatsoever, and I think it'll be huge for Fiat to help them get there next year.
We'll see it next March. But Sergio's strategy is, global strategy is Jeep and Alpha.
Well, he better get going on Alpha.
Jeep's
doing just fine.
Yeah, but he's dreaming on Alpha. I don't care what they say. He's mm-hmm. dreaming on Alpha.
Did you see the thing that we did, too? I think it was on Monday on diesels, of how Bosch is predicting that by 2015, again, only 4 years away, 10% of the U.S. market will be all diesel. That includes the, the heavy-duty full-size pickups from GM, Ford, and Ram, Chevy, Ford, and Ram. But nonetheless, that's a lot of diesels. And that would be five times what the hybrid sales numbers are.
And Ford just released can't buy it yet, but the electric Focus.
Yeah, good luck. I as we've talked about,
same price as the Volt.
Yeah, $40,000. I'm sure they're losing money on every single one. Just like I'm convinced in my mind, at least, GM's losing money on every Volt, and Nissan's losing money on every
Corsair.
On every Leaf.
They can talk about amortizing the technology all they want, but, it's
right.
going to take a long time.
It's going to take a long time, and it's early in the game.
But to GM's credit, they discovered a lot of things by developing the Volt that improves the rest of their car line. So, it's certainly worth it.
It's not a wasted effort.
No, it's not. I still consider the Volt that's the car in terms of that type of future think stuff.
I think it's pretty cool. I think if somebody figures out a way of really fast recharge for batteries, like a defibrillator where just kabop.
Well, we talked about that when
recharge it like that.
Potential about racing at Le Mans with a ultra advanced electric prototype racer, you would have mm-hmm. You'd have to be able to come into the pits, and it would be have to like a defibrillator. They'd have to put 4 points on the car and instant charge and all good. And until they can do that, until you can pull up into a gas station and get a charge in 5 minutes,
Yeah. No, I'm talking like seconds.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you're saying. But let's say the average fill-up takes what?
Three to five.
Three minutes,
right.
5 minutes.
Right.
Until they can do that.
Yeah, it's not going to be competitive.
It's only going to be a little niche thing.
Well, you know, I was in Taiwan earlier this year and went to visit a company called Delta Electronics, and they're building batteries now, electric car batteries that have got supercapacitors built into them, and they can take a defibrillator kind of charge to them. So maybe they're getting there, but again, it's, you know, outrageously expensive stuff. So it's, yeah, the technology may be there, but maybe we can't afford it either.
Yeah. The ICE has a long way to go.
Well, I say that and combine it. I'm still intrigued by biofuels. And there's other stuff coming out now, like on butanol, that's very interesting that I know only a smidgen about. But the point being is there's some very interesting alternatives out
there.
Well,
I still like Cascada, what Cascada was doing. I mean, if you can turn the nation's trash into fuel with the flux capacitor,
right,
or whatever, then that's right. That's the secret, right?
Well, I've always said if America can turn garbage into fuel, the rest of the world better watch out. But we'll see if that ever happens. I've seen a lot of earnings in the last week as well. And by and large, pretty impressive numbers, you know, going back to BMW, you know, just shocking everybody.
But as you mentioned before, GM and Ford have to really ramp up Cadillac and Lincoln, because if they don't, you know, they are...
They're screwed. Oh, well, not screwed, but they're not going to
be... But they're missing out on a whole opportunity for profitability.
No question about it. That's one of the things that is really surprising, that on a profitability standpoint, companies that sell far fewer vehicles than they do are starting to catch them in revenue, but especially in profits. When you look at BMW's profits, it's like yowza.
And Audi's profits.
And Audi, yeah. Volkswagen, wow, they're number one already. Forget this 2018 stuff, man. They're there.
Yeah, they're
there in revenue. They're there in profit. They're indisputable number one in the world right now. No question about it. And we'll see what the actual vehicle sales are at the end of the world, at the end of the year. I'm thinking about next year, Peter, when the Maya calendar ends.
Oh, that's right.
That was my Freudian slip. But, yeah, VW, I think we can declare them right here and right now, number one in the world.
Yeah.
But, yeah, going back to your point, this shows a real weakness at GM and Ford. Cadillac and Lincoln are not true global luxury brands yet. Cadillac's ahead of Lincoln by a long shot.
Oh, by a long shot.
But it doesn't sell in the volume that General Motors is going to need from it.
And Cadillac has the XTS and the ATS coming
next year. So that's going to help, because, you know, Audi's starting to get real close to Cadillac right now.
Yeah.
I think they're within, on a monthly sales unit basis, you know, within like 4,000 units a month. And I mean, it wasn't that long ago they were way behind that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. ATS and XTS, they desperately need those cars, and they're going to get them next year.
I think the XTS is going to do very well. I really do. I think it's got great presence. It looks, you know, it looks nicely tailored, as Bill Mitchell would say. And, you know, I think it's going to do well, because I think people look for a larger Cadillac. And, you know, everyone says, oh, we got to capture the youth. Well, the youth can't afford anything. So, you know, like we've all been to the long leads and the media previews, oh, we're aiming this at the youth market. Well, they can't afford it, even at $22,000 or whatever. So there's that, but there's also the over 50 market. I mean, that's mm-hmm. huge. Mm-hmm. And so I think this new Cadillac, this new full-size Cadillac, is coming just at the right time.
No,
it looks good, too.
Right. And we should let the viewers know now, too, that we're going to have Stuart Norris from Cadillac joining us later in the show, talking about their new Q system, user thing that they've got. But You know what we need to do is take our first commercial break right now, because there's still some more stuff I want to pick up on what you were saying about Bill Mitchell. But Ben, we've got to thank the sponsors that make this show possible. Let's talk about Bridgestone.
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly, producing products that save on fuel and emissions, and some that can be reused again, and promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
So you're talking about Bill Mitchell talking about a car being perfectly tailored?
Well, you know, this week was the 100th anniversary of Chevrolet, and I, you know, I've been reading a lot of stuff, and, you know, there's been a lot of good stuff, but I thought I'd share with my readers some of my memories of growing up in the heyday of General Motors and being surrounded by all these people and, you know, Bunky Knudsen would send over the hottest Pontiac that they built every year for my mother to drive. She always had the hottest, reddest Pontiac convertible that Bunky would send over. And, you know, my brother and I thought, you know, what a country, you know. from 58, 9, 60, from then on, my mom always had a hot Pontiac that Bunky. And then the people after Bunky, I mean, we always had a Pontiac. But, you know, Bill Mitchell, that was a different era. I mean, that was truly a swashbuckling era. GM controlled 48, 49% of the market. If you ran a division at General Motors, you were head of a small country because you were responsible for everything, production, design, everything. But Bill Mitchell was... inherited the design, the styling mantle from Harley Earl, and he was a piece of work, and he lived a block away from me. So, so I, you know, I got to know him pretty well, and I also got to ride in every significant GM styling concept car of that era with him, usually on a Saturday morning, run up to the drugstore or whatever, but it was pretty special. And he was just crazy. I mean, I had a flurry of adjectives about him in my column. I mean, he was maniacal. He was brilliant. He was exasperating. He was he was crazy. He was difficult to deal with. He was, you know, there were all kinds of reports of his tantrums in the design, you know, inside styling, urging the troops on to do better. But net-net, he brought great work. And... of course, he had some fabulous guys working for him. I mean, Larry Shinoda and, you know, who designed the Stingray. Well, Pete Brock designed the initial sketch, but Shinoda was there and that brought to life the original Stingray, which is still, to this day, my favorite all-time car.
It's a piece of artwork, no question about it.
And when I don't think people realize... the size of the Stingray when you walk up to it, how compact it is, and
to today's eye, especially. Cars have gotten so big just from a safety standpoint, you know, how big the pillars are and everything like that, the sail panels and like
that. Yeah, the original Stingray was so elegant. Right. I mean, just and
taut.
Yeah, and when you see it up close, it's just amazing, you know, it's just but Mitchell, you know, he had the incredible talent to translate, you know, the visionary stuff they were doing in concepts and bringing it to the mainstream, their mainstream production portfolio. I don't think there was any designer, chief designer, better at that. Mm-hmm. He brought concepts to the road that they still look like show cars when they got to the road. And that was Mitchell's genius, I think.
Well, it was, and the system allowed him to do that. And I know it was a different era, but to me, why not recreate that again?
Well, you know, Ed Welburn has done a tremendous job at General Motors. I mean, and, you know, it started before Ed took over, but, you know, it takes a real touch to bring out all the creativity. and make it all work. And, you know, Ed's job is exponentially tougher than what Mitchell had because he's got all these global studios and...
Right. Well, not only that, but today, you know, you got to worry about safety standards.
Yeah,
incorporate that into your design. You don't have as much freedom, I don't think, even with all the computer-aided design and whatnot today, which gives you an enormous amount of freedom. I don't think you had the design freedom that you did in the past because you do have to make certain compromises today. You didn't have to do that.
Yeah, and Ed is just really, really good at just bringing the cream to the surface and making sure it gets there. And the cool thing about Ed is he understands the legacy. Like we've talked about shooting a show in the design lobby just to show the viewers how
right.
cool that building is and,
right.
and the legacy of Earl and Mitchell and the legacy that Ed is continuing. And Ed's a real enthusiast, and he's taken upon himself to start refurbishing some of these fabulous GM cars. And the first one he did was the Stingray. The Stingray has been totally restored, and it is a jewel. I mean, it would look good right here.
We can bring that car in the studio.
Would,
you bet we can.
And it would fit just, I mean, when you see it, I mean, the current Corvette, I would bet, is bigger than the Stingray.
Oh, hugely so. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the original Stingray is just something spectacular.
No, whenever I look at two-seat sports cars these days, most of them, like the Corvette, you know, the Mercedes SL and a whole bunch
They're
of
huge,
others.
Yeah.
Well, I look at the curb weight and you go, oh, my God, you know, how can you, where's all the weight? I mean, you know, where'd they hide it? It's amazing how heavy cars are right now.
And the cool thing about that era is, you know, living a block away, every Friday afternoon, they would talk to Mitchell and say, well, what cars do you want at the house this weekend? Now, if it was going to be a clear weekend, in other words, no rain, then they would bring the original Stingray and the Corvair Sebring Spider, which was, there were no tops on these cars. Mm. And then the Mako Shark and the XP700, you know, they'd be all lined up in his driveway and he'd just, whatever he felt like driving. And it was something else. I mean, he'd drive it to the country club. He'd drive the original Stingray to the country club and park it right there. And the valets are just like, oh, hi, Mr. Mitchell. You know, he was a horrible golfer. He had no patience for golf. He'd walk off. He'd go play at Bloomfield, and inevitably he'd walk off on the ninth hole, just and peel out and down Long Lake Road. But, you know, it was a great era. And the business has fundamentally changed now. But the only place where you still feel the business to me, there are two. One are the true believers in engineering and product development, mm-hmm. especially the product development, the suspension development guys, and the other is design.
Right.
I mean, those are the two places.
Most product focused.
Yeah, and when you walk around in the business today, that's where you still see the legacy of the business is alive and well.
Sure, because they're there to create great machines, great automobiles.
Yeah.
That's what's motivating them. And, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what people walk into the showrooms to buy. It's
exactly.
the most important part of the business.
Yes. Design is the ultimate initial product differentiator and will remain so.
Well, that's probably a good segue to bring on the guest then, because he's part of GM Design.
Yeah.
But, Stuart, come on up here. Let's get you in.
Thank you.
So, first off, great having you here with us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, what I've got down here is that you're the lead designer on the Cadillac Q. Now, explain what the Cadillac Q is first.
What is Cadillac Q? It's like a branded user experience, and it's an infotainment system for our next generation of Cadillac products. So, really, what we did a few years ago when we started working within our user experience design team and my partners at the electrical engineering, we sat down with kind of the Cadillac marketing team and said, we're an aspirational global luxury brand, as you guys were talking about earlier. One of the areas that we need to to improve ourselves and bring to the next level in terms of making ourselves relevant as a global luxury player, as a luxury branded user interface. We looked at Audi and BMW and Mercedes with the MMIs and iDrives and so on. And we said, well, we need to have something that really stands as a consistent user experience for our customers in the showroom, and it's something that can be kind of like the centerpiece of all of our future Cadillac interiors. So we went about designing, like a center stack, steering wheel controls, and a cluster system that really creates like a holistic interior experience. And creates a really strong identity for the Cadillac brand. So that's kind of what Q is.
So how's it different than the other ones that you mentioned, whether it's the MMI, the iDrive, or
My Ford Touch,
right?
Well, I certainly from a German luxury competitor point of view, we see Cadillac as being a touch company.
What do you mean a touch company?
A touchy-feely company?
Well, absolutely. Well, I think, in many respects, I think it's dare I say, it's a sensuous brand. So we really wanted to make touch and a touch interface really the heart of what we do.
So when your finger actually touches something, feel something different?
Well, I think, all of the German competitors use, like unlock the safe on the center console. And, it's very, that's...
unlock the safe.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I hadn't heard that before.
So what we wanted to do was say, look, we understand that customers are using iPads. They're using tablets. I mean, actually, when we started the project, tablets were not yet around, but people were moving towards it with the iPhone and iPod Touch and so on.
But that's a very cold touch. I mean, I'm using an iPad right now, and it's very convenient. But I wouldn't call this as a touchy feely kind of interface.
I think the touchy feeliness of it, I suppose, is. It's a part of an overall, tactile interior experience. So we have the fortune in Cadillac interiors of being able to mix that with, real natural materials, cut and sew interiors. But we want to make the technology part feel like it's a piece of technology. So I think that's a unique part of how we can, it's a full experience when you're in a Cadillac. It's not just an electronic device.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also we've added a huge amount of technology to the system. We are the first to be offering a haptic feedback in the display and on the controls.
So as you touch the it's screen touching, you mean that you'll get a haptic feedback through
exactly.
The screen?
Yep. So both the upper and the lower screens are capacitive. So we're the first to be offering a fully capacitive screen.
Uh-huh.
Traditionally, most of the touch screens, in our own vehicles and in the competition, are a resistive display. So, you've actually got to apply some force to make the system work. When you use your iPad or your iPhone, it's a very feather-light interface, and we're going to be delivering that both for screen and for the lower controls.
And what's the haptic feedback, vibration?
Yeah, so we have haptic actuators both on the display screen and on the controls on the lower, and we're able to tune those to give the customer a kind of some tactile feedback that they know that they've operated something. On most of the capacitive executions you see today, you touch it and you get a little beep or something. But we've enriched that with the haptic feedback, which is first in the market and really helps.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. That's good.
I think it helps, kind of the blind operation as well. So if you're driving along...
So if you're blind and you're driving.
Yeah, exactly.
And not a problem.
That is an uncatered for sector of the market, and we wanted to go after that. No, I mean, so if you want to be able to use the screen while you're driving, we're giving you that feedback that tells you
you don't have
you've
to look right
something.
At it. You're
exactly.
getting the feedback that you've exactly. hit it right or wrong.
So does it glow when you touch it, or is that not part of it?
We do some, it gives you some feedback when you press a button on the screen. Obviously, we give you some visual feedback. That you've done something. We do have some kind of, you might call it glowing. We have proximity sensors in the system. So when you're driving along and your hands are on the wheel and you just want to see what your radio station is or where your nav might be. We give you a big full screen with all of that information kind of uncluttered by anything else.
Fantastic. And yeah, I want to talk more about that in a sec, but go ahead.
Well, when your hand goes into the system, we have proximity sensors there, and it knows that you want to use the system, so it brings more information up. Buttons come up. The nav is a particularly compelling kind of execution of this because, you know, very often the nav gets covered up by, well, here's my distance until I arrive. And, you know, we have to put a lot of information onto a nav screen. So all of that goes away until I want to go in and use it. So I get my full screen nav, and then the system knows when I want to use it and brings more information up then.
Mm-hmm. What's the input? How do you input information like entering an address in the nav system?
We'll be the first in market with a natural language speech recognition system. So, without any shadow, speech is going to be
the way.
That's
the only way?
It's not the only way. No, absolutely not. No, I mean, you can, you know, we have a single line entry, navigation entry. So, you know, bring up a traditional QWERTY keyboard instead of the traditional automotive, which is, you know, state, city, street, number, right. You know, because that's so intuitive and a natural way to do it. So we've got like a Google-like single line entry. So I can just put in, you know, whether it be a place of interest or a specific address, I can type it in as a single line. But we think that that speech is going to be the way to really use speech recognition. We focused on...
Does your research show that? Because I tell you, sometimes I get in the car, I'm so lazy, I don't even want to talk to the car.
Well, I think that it's the negative performance of speech recognition that is what... I think we've all had the same same experience where we try and have a voice input and it doesn't work, and so you try again and it doesn't work. So it's like, okay, I'm done. Speech recognition's good. I'll move on. But our natural language speech recognition is, you know, we've been able to map the kind of dialects and speech patterns of the entire sort of lower 48 and put a model together as to how people speak. And so we've got that as an extra level of capability on our speech recognition engine so that, you know, instead of, a very stiff and unnatural way of inputting, it's now, you know, give me directions to home, give me directions to Jet's Pizza, whatever it might be. And that's the way that you're going to be able to input to your destination entry. And we think that's without doubt the most effective, the fastest and the safest way to use your navigation entry.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we should take another quick break here. We've got to thank our sponsors that make this show possible. And Ben, let's talk about Chevrolet here.
The Chevrolet Cruze is the car that is taking the world by storm. And a key reason is all the equipment that it offers. A driver information center, a USB port, ambient LED backlighting on the dashboard, remote start with a MyLink app, two accessory power outlets, one in front and one in the back for the rear passengers, OnStar, turn-by-turn directions, free for the first 6 months. Whew, there's just too much to list here. And you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/cruise.
Did you guys look at the little sort of scratch pad Audi now has as a means of entry? Did you consider anything like that as a way of putting information into the system, like an address in the nav system?
I think what we've really focused on has been for destination entry, certainly, and any of the tasks that really are laborious and are going to, you know, take the driver a long time to do. We've really focused on speech for those, and the three areas of focus we put on that are navigation, audio, and phone. Mm-hmm. We've done our own benchmarking of those systems, and frankly, if you can get a good speech recognition system, it's much better than almost any other means of putting those kind of long and laborious tasks into place. So I think doing a really great speech recognition capability was our focus in terms of those features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, we've got some of it coming up on the screen right now. And so you designed a whole system, which I find interesting. It's not just an engineer doing all the the programming and whatnot. What were you really trying to achieve overall here from just a look standpoint, the appearance of it?
Well, I mean, certainly the center stack is kind of, from a design perspective, is really the key design feature. We looked at a lot of high-end luxury consumer electronics, you know, Virtu phones and the like, and that was really our inspiration. Also, the fact that, I don't know whether you're going to see it in the video, but the whole system is what we call dead-fronted. So when it's turned off, it's black. It's completely black. So none of the graphics are there. You know, we wanted to try and take it away from a very traditional automotive aesthetic and say, how can we sort of take the drama and the sophistication of what we see for the Cadillac brand and make that real in those components? So it's got this beautiful piano black finish. When it's turned off, it's completely black. We've got these cool, bright metal accents over the lower faceplate. That lower faceplate also deploys, so we've been able to, you know, it motorizes out of the way. We have nearly 2 liters of storage space behind there. So I think that the center stack is really this kind of sculpted and, you know, I mean, tailored is another really good word. I mean, you know, we really wanted it to have this very high-end consumer electronics and sculptural look. The dead-fronted piano black we've kind of taken through in other areas. So the steering wheel controls, again, when that's off, it's completely, there are no ISOs or words or graphics on it. So it gives you this very cool effect when you start the vehicle up and all these graphics suddenly light up inside the vehicle. It's like, cool, where did that come from? It's like it's really got a magical appearance to it.
So when will we first see this? When will this first appear, and on what?
This will be launched on the XTS, and then it's going to be put into a couple of other products in the model year 13 timeframe.
So we'll see it in the XTS next year.
Yes. Yep. So when the XTS gets launched, this will be the standard equipment on that vehicle. We additionally have a 12-inch fully reconfigurable cluster on the XTS as well, which is, we really took advantage of the reconfigurability of it. We've noticed, you know, there are other 12-inch displays in the market, mm-hmm. But we really wanted to take advantage of
12-inch. That's pretty good size.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, for a design team, it's like, wow, we got 12 inches of LCD to play with. We need boundaries. We need to know what to design to. So we gave ourselves, you know, we kind of looked at four different kind of personas of types of drivers that might want to drive our vehicle. We looked at kind of performance people that are kind of techno junkies that really just, you know, live in a connected world. We looked at the, somebody who's looking for a more traditional sort of balanced look to a cluster, and then also somebody who really wants a super, super simple layout. We've heard it from so many customers. It's like, what do you give me a coolant gauge for? What do you give me a tack for? I just want to know how fast I'm going and how much gas I've got until I run out. So there are four different looks that the customer can pick from in the fully reconfigurable cluster. And if you want just the complete basic information, that's fine. Or if you want a more traditional sort of balanced three-gauge analog layout, we can do that. And then we've got this cool performance look. Excuse me. This cool performance look that's like big dominant gauges, tack and speedo. So we've had a lot of fun exploring what we could do with that cluster.
That's pretty wild. Does anyone else offer that level of reconfigurability right now?
I believe not. No, I think we.
Yeah,
I
not
think
that we're I gonna can be, think of. Nothing I've driven this year.
No, I think for the most part we've seen, a little bit of a. Well, let's take our traditional gauges and render them on a display, and I think, you know, that's leaving a lot on the table for what a display like that can do. And I think that's one of the things about Q as a whole is it's a scalable system. It's tailorable. Mm-hmm. You know, we can tailor it to customers' needs. If we, you know, when you go into the center stack, if all you want to do is just like tune the radio station, save a preset, that's good. We're done. We've got that covered. If you want to listen to, if you want to connect your Bluetooth device and stream Pandora in and tag a song and give it thumbs up, thumbs down, and all that kind of stuff, that's all fully integrated into the system as well. So we've tried to cater for as broad a spectrum of customers as we can with the system.
So eventually, I imagine what you're doing, and GM's going to probably throughout their product line, even the less expensive cars, we're all going to be going to this black field until you fire it up, would you say?
I don't think so. Part of what my group does is in our design group, we're divided into what we call branded user experience.
It's only going to be Cadillac, but don't you think some of this technology is going to end up filtering down to the lower segments?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. I mean, I think this is increasingly becoming a price of entry for all of the brands.
I mean, doing it for Cadillac, but this is where it's going for the industry.
I think what we want to be able to do is, there are things that we are doing on Q that are only going to be available in a Cadillac-priced vehicle.
Right, right.
And, we've got this lens across the display. It's an optical lens. I mean, we created ourselves a heck of a lot of trouble by making it as cool and as...
Might be a little too pricey for a Spark or something
exactly.
But I didn't mean that complicated, but I would imagine, because isn't this stuff also lighter? Is in the part of the design, is it's lighter... takes up less weight in the car? Is that
I think that probably what we're... I can't necessarily tell you it's lighter, but certainly I think one of the big things, is, as it is with all electronics, is things don't get lighter or cheaper. We just get more stuff, right? So it weighs the same.
But is it easier to package?
It does 10 times as much stuff.
All these electronics are getting so thin these days.
Yep.
I got to believe from a you talked about how the screen will lift up and you got 2 liters of storage behind it. You couldn't have done that a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's really where our relationship with the electrical organization really began. I work closely with the lead engineer, guy called Mike Hishmi, who works with me. Yeah, we work together in the studio. And the first things that we kind of set about were, let's get that big honking double din silver box out of the middle of the car. That's a bunch of lakefront property that we want to take advantage of. So one of the first things we did was, okay, let's bust all that stuff up. Let's take the tuner out. Nobody needs to see the tuner. That can go somewhere. We're basically creating a computing platform with our second module. So that can go wherever it wants. Nobody needs to see that. Wow, we just cleared up 2 liters of space in the middle here. Let's do this fantastic deployable lower faceplate. It's got a little capacitive button on the bottom of it. You just put your finger on it, powers up, and it's flocked. It's got a USB port in there. It's got a little rubber mat. So all of your devices, your sunglasses, your wallet, whatever, they can all securely go away and be covered in there. And instead of having to lean over to your glove box, it's all there in the center of the vehicle.
What about from a graphical standpoint? It's amazing to me how wide a variety of graphics there are. And again, just using nav as an example, sometimes I look at a nav screen and it's a bowl of spaghetti of roads of different colors. And then you look at the same map on other cars, and it's very clean and easy to figure out where you're supposed to be going.
Yeah, I mean, we've got this, one of the cool things we've got on our navigation feature is it's, similar to what you would expect in a lot of PNDs or something. It's got this, auto zoom in as you're coming into a specific maneuver. It does an auto zoom in, so you get a much more contextually appropriate map. And then if you want to zoom out back again, it will zoom back out again. We've worked very hard in terms of an overall graphical layout for our buttons. We've used medical equipment specs in terms of the size of these buttons to make sure that we're not putting too much stuff on the screen at one time, that the buttons are large and easy to use, and you're not inadvertently actuating something when you're trying to do something else. And then we spent a lot of time, tuning the map colors to make sure that the navigation screens are clear and legible. I think, when you see the nav screens, it's a very legible and easy to use system.
One last question. What about microprocessor speed and how does it perform in the winter? One of my big beefs with all these systems is I get out and it's freezing cold outside as we get here in Michigan. You fire up the car and Boy, the screen takes a while to warm up. And then you put it in reverse and it takes forever for the camera to come up. And then you put it in drive and the stupid backup camera's still on. And you're trying to change radio stations or bring up other info. And it's just slow as molasses. What, have you guys addressed that?
Of course. It's not. It's, what do you want me to say? It's really slow. No. No, I mean, I think, you know, we test our systems. I think GM has at least the most rigorous testing facilities and protocols. I know that, you know, the backup camera, you know, we have incredibly rapid requirements in terms of when that backup camera needs to come up. I mean, the processor capability, I'm not really supposed to talk about it because I come from the wrong building, but apparently there are three cores, and it's an incredibly powerful operating platform. And as I say, you know, we have very high requirements in terms of, you know, high and low ambient temperature requirements, and I think it's going to be an excellent quality system.
Cool. Hey, why don't we take another commercial break and then let's come back for rapid fire. But Ben, we got to thank our friends at Hyundai right now. With gas prices where they are these days, if you're after fuel efficiency, you need to check out the Hyundai Sonata. There's three different models to choose from. The 2.4-liter GDI, which delivers a segment-leading 35 miles per gallon. Then there's the 2-liter turbo, which offers 274 horsepower, yet delivers 33 miles per gallon. And the brand-new hybrid that provides a combined 37 miles per gallon. And you can learn a lot more about each one at HyundaiSonata.com. All right, my favorite part of the show, where we get into all the viewers' questions and comments, too. Ben, let's get into rapid fire. All right. George from Brooklyn wants to know, can a customer customize the display? For example, what if I wanted to make the Speedo look like a 69 Camaro?
That is not currently something we're planning to offer, not in the first model year at least. I think we've talked, you know, we use this phrase sometimes at design, that this is the last instrument cluster that this vehicle will ever need. You know, it's got like infinite amount of flexibility and growth and upgradability to really. So I think there's definitely the capability to be able to customize and offer, you know, it's almost like a completely separate, you know, business stream to sort of say, how do we offer customizable systems within what we've got? But at the moment, it will not, you can't, it's not customizable ad infinitum.
The answer is no.
But I mean, we offer a lot. I mean, in the center stack, just as you do on your iPad home screen, you can change whatever applications you want through there. We've got this big list of favorites that you can go in and rename and customize and so on. Where we've taken preset stations to a whole new level of customization. You can, you know, save a phone number or a navigation entry or a playlist from your iPod or whatever. So, I mean, there's a lot of customization, but not quite the 69.
Not
Camaro.
The 69 Camaro.
Sorry about that.
Okay. George from Brooklyn wants to know, do these displays come in non-English languages for overseas markets?
Oh, yes. I believe 51 languages.
Wow.
We offer. Yeah. Which is actually, you know, when we're trying to lay out graphics and font and so on, it's difficult enough when you're using, you know, two languages, American and English. But you know, it's probably Kazakhstan. I mean, we literally have 51 languages, including Mandarin.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
That's wild. Goggles Pisano wants to know, will the XTS demographic be able to adapt to the Q system so easily? He goes on to say, I'm looking at my parents who drove a 91 Cadillac Sedan DeVille for the longest time, yet still have trouble sending an email.
Well, I think a couple of things. I think that, yes, as I talked about earlier, I think that the interface is scalable. It's as involved as you want it to be, or it's as simple as you want it to be. And I think we can cater to both of those areas of the market. I also think that old people are not, they're not as old as they used to be. You know,
my parents use email. They used an iPad, for Christ's sake. I mean, if they can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah, I mean, my parents are also, you know, my parents are in England. We Skype with them. You know, my mother-in-law has a smartphone and a MacBook Air. I mean, you know, I think it's a little disingenuous to the older generation to suggest that they don't know anything about technology because they're not as old as they used to be.
What?
Yeah. The times, they are a-changing. Here's a great comment from Tony Gray. He says, give me a couple of reasons to trade in my BMW 335 Coupe for a new ATS.
Well, I drove a manual ATS last week. We went out to Milford and did a drive, and that thing is fantastic. I thought it was awesome. It's a genuinely small car, and I mean that in the positive way. I mean, you know, when we set out originally to develop a 3 Series size vehicle, I was pretty cynical about how well we would be able to manage that. And it really is a fantastically compact, and it feels really sporty, very responsive. But I think it's going to be novel. If you want to have something other than what everybody else is driving, you've got a car that, you know, performs at least to the same levels as that vehicle, and it's a distinctive proposition. We're offering something unique.
Is it a 3 Series size or a 1 Series size? Where is the ATS?
I'm going to say current 3 Series. It's about the it may be a hair smaller than the current 3 Series.
Okay.
The new 3 Series, I think, has grown in size significantly.
Yeah, it has.
Luigi B. wants to know, love the technology, but what is Cadillac doing to avoid something similar to the My Ford Touch debacle?
We're going to do it really well. I think we've taken an approach where, you know, we've tried to add technologies that are going to make some of the capacitive inputs and so on. I think this haptic technology that we've included is going to really improve the usability of it. In terms of our screens and so on, we've really focused on putting not too much information on the screen at one time. So when you're in a given application, you got information about that application, but probably not everything else that's going on in the system. We've really, from the very beginning, you know, we were well underway before My Ford Touch was launched, and we've always, from the very beginning, had ease of use and kind of an approachable level of technology that's always been at the heart of what we've done. So I think we've always kept on that path, and I think Q is going to prove to be usable and user friendly.
Hey, Ben, I see we got a phone call in the queue here. Let's bring that up.
In the queue?
On the Cadillac, I do agree with Peter. The XTS should do very well in the U.S., but the ATS is going to be their key to global become a global market for Cadillac. And I think it will do very well based on the CTS. But I think they really need to do something about Buick. I mean, the Regal got outsold by the brand-new Passat 2-1, and I think their cars are just placed too high in the market. The price is $27,000 for a Regal. That should be about $24,000, which is about $1,000 over the midpoint of the mid-car segment. And I think the sales would be a lot better and a lot more profitable, which is GM's biggest problem, I see, going forward. They're not getting the money out of Buick and GMC that they could. And being that Buick's overpriced, it puts it in competition with Cadillac, which just makes it a bad situation overall. Same thing with the upcoming Verano. Great car. I think it will sell well, but 23 starting price, it's about 2,000 too high. 21 is about 1,000 over the midpoint of the small car market. At the base of the midsize segment, I think that's a lot better positioning. Instead of heel-to-toe position the cars about the midpoint of the size below it. Comments?
Interesting take on that. I think that's probably one of the harder things to do is how do you price Buick these days? Because if you come down too low, like Rick's suggesting here, now you're competing with Chevrolet, you go too high on a given model, now you're starting to get into where Cadillac is.
Wasn't this all supposed to be sorted out when GM jettisoned those?
This was. Yeah. This was. But, you know, again, it comes back to, you know, the brand should just be what the brand is. And, you know.
Well, you know, Buick's got the Regal GS now, and they're trying to be, you know, something they never were in this country. So it's going to be interesting.
It is. I still think it should be all about plush. That's what I would do if I had Buick.
Yeah, I agree. If I was doing Buick, it would be about design.
Right.
And just, you know, like you enjoy driving the Audi A8 mm-hmm. better than the A7.
That's right.
Because you just like...
I just love the presence of that car.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, Beauregard Jackson wants to know here, Stuart, will the capacitive screen work even though I'm wearing thick leather gloves driving in the winter?
We have tested the capacitive with leather, natural leather gloves up to kind of like a 4 to 5 mil thickness. Works fine. And of course, all Cadillac owners wear leather gloves. They wouldn't be wearing something synthetic. So we do have some issues with synthetic materials, but leather gloves up to about 5 mil thickness, the capacitive works fine.
Here's an idea. Cadillac should have those leather gloves in the glove box, just as part of you buying the car. You pick your size and you get that.
Yeah, it's all part of the concierge service.
Why not?
Service.
Why not? Mitch W. says, to the gentleman from Cadillac, he says, silicon tech changes at a furious pace. Do you think that the Q system of today will be sexy in 5 years?
I do believe it will be, yeah. I mean, one of the things that we're offering with the Q system is a level of upgradability in terms of software. So,
oh, how do you do that?
So at the moment, the assumption is it's going to be done over USB. So through a USB port, you'll be able to get the
hey, there's a chance for that 69 Camaro right, display yet.
Well, that's what I was kind of talking about in terms of the upgradability. That there is, you know, that we will have the ability to be able to reflash, you know, features, refinements, and so on to the system that will be able to be reflashed through the USB port.
Okay, there's a second part of this question that goes to Pietro. He wrote this week about growing up in the GM heyday, and you were talking about that. But he wants to know, what will the next heyday for Detroit look like?
Boy, I don't know. And by the way, you know, I could do a whole nother column on the Ford stories. But people just say, oh, well, you know, as a GM. People also forget it's a very small town, and we had lots of friends at Ford's, and we had Cobras every weekend, and there's a whole nother column, whole nother book there. You know, I don't know what the next heyday will be like. I would hope that the domestic-based automobile companies will be thriving and on the leading edge and not getting their asses handed to them by, you know, BMW and Audi. I mean, that's...
My new Detroit heyday will be when top management is once again hyper-focused on the retail end of the business and the product end of the business, and not on all this financial mumbo-jumbo that they've been so focused on. I'd like to see boards of directors that have got automotive manufacturing experts, automotive retailing and marketing expertise. We don't have any of that. They're almost all financially based and or some sort of cherry pick things where they bring in medical field people and that sort of thing. And it's like, I think that's fine to have on a board, but you should at least have some people who have a fundamental deep knowledge of the business that they're boarding over.
Yeah, well, yeah, until they get that house in order, we probably won't see another heyday.
I don't think so. That's right, until we see that. Let's see. George from Brooklyn, another question you got in here. Where do you see Cadillac tech in 5 years? Are there any plans for more head-up displays?
We will be offering a full-color head-up display in XTS. Head-up display, certainly with a lot of the enhanced safety features and so on for collision alert and adaptive cruise and these other kind of features. As we go into these kind of more advanced safety features, HUD is definitely a big area that we plan to develop. So, yeah, full-color HUD in the XTS.
Stephen Reynolds wants to know, do you think the bad press on my Ford Touch will hurt Ford in the long run? Or do you see the issues with the system as something that is just an easy fix for Ford and that any issues will be forgotten very quickly? Old news by New Year's Day?
They're fixing the issues, and I think they're doing a better job at getting their consumers who buy them to understand it. I think it might pass. I really do.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be old news by New Year's Day, but it'll pass. I agree totally. Brian wants to know, or talks about, the local Detroit media went gaga over Ford's lane avoidance technology. He says, I don't understand why, because that's been available for some time in other makes. Is there something new or different about Ford's version? I think the answer is it's on a Ford. You know, we're not talking about Infiniti or Mercedes or BMW or something like that. We're talking about Ford with
this. We're talking about the democratization of technology.
There you go. There you go. I think that's a good way to put it. Let's see. Do we have? Yeah, we have another phone call here. Ben, let's bring it in.
John, Bob Overton from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, calling. Went in to order a new pickup truck, and the ordering process now is that you cannot buy what you want, rather buy what they want to sell you. You might want to look at that that whole process on one of your shows. Thanks again. I'm a faithful listener and watcher to After Hours and your daily show. Have a great day. Bye for now.
Cool. Thanks for the kind words there. But I would say all dealers have always tried to sell you what's on the lot.
Yeah.
Because they've bought those cars. They've got their capital investment on what's sitting out there in the lot. And their salespeople are trained to sell that first. It's true. If you want to order your own vehicle, you've got to be firm. You got to be insistent with them. You got to tell them, I don't care about anything you have here. This is what I want. Yeah. Now maybe he's on to something else here that I'm not aware of. That's the reality of the market. But I'll tell you, dealerships, by and large, do not like to take an order from you. All the salespeople are trained, and they know they're going to make a sale instantly if they can get you to buy something that's right there.
Right.
So that's... There's my soapbox's worth. Hey, we've been at this for an hour. This is probably as good a time to wrap up as any. But, Stuart, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Thank Very you. Interesting stuff. And,
right.
You know, I'll withhold judgment until I drive this thing, especially in the cold weather with my leather gloves on. and then we'll know for sure how good it is. But I can't wait to drive it. Everything you've been talking about is very interesting.
Just GM revealed when the XTS is hitting dealers?
I don't believe we have, but I think it's going to be in the second quarter of next year.
XTS, and so is that at the LA Auto Show?
XTS?
Yeah.
It is? Okay,
yeah.
So 2 weeks' time, we'll see the official unveiling.
We can take you through it.
Yeah, cool.
The production version looks better than the concept.
No kidding, because the concept was pretty good.
Yeah, but they did some work. Ed took me through it when the last time I was with them over there, and they did a lot of work on the C-pillar. And some other little detail stuff. It looks better.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I like that because they showed that to us, almost 3 years ago? Or was it 2 years
two
ago?
Years
certainly.
Two years ago.
So I'm glad to hear it, that they've kept on working on it just because I like seeing new things, new lines.
Yeah.
But, Peter, good seeing you again.
Good seeing you, John.
And be sure to join us next week when we're going to have Chris Payne, the guy who did the movie The Revenge of the Electric Car. That ought to be an interesting discussion, especially with us. Remember, you can check it all out at autoline.tv. We've got a new look to the website. You can follow us at Facebook, facebook.com/autolinedetroit, or Twitter, twitter.com/autoline. Check out all of Peter's stuff at autoextremist.com. Or Facebook, right? Facebook,
yeah,
you're there,
and
too.
And Twitter.
And thanks, folks, for having tuned in. It's been great.
Visit our website, autolinedetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there and much more at autolinedetroit.tv.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.